The first question really I'd like to ask you would be, how do you think that attitudes towards the queer community have changed during your lifetime?
Well, I'm 25, so that's more the 90s and early 2000s, late 2000s kind of thing. I think attitudes have changed not just towards the queer community, but also within the queer community, and that really does need to be, understood in context. So we have had structurally less homophobia. We've had more enabled conversations about sexual orientation and gender identity, definitely. But those conversations are also happening within our own sphere. So in the past 10 years, definitely transgender identity has come up a whole lot more in our conversations, and with social media being how social media is, those conversations are taking place across the globe, and everyone is seeing those conversations. I think there is a reduction in homophobia, biphobia, and transphobia, those attitudes. But I think the more secondary and acceptable homophobia, biphobia, and transphobia have not really been dented too much. I think there is a resurgence, definitely in the last 4 or 5 years, of defensiveness to being referenced as LGBT phobic or queer phobic. The woke brigade, getting called that from certain politicians and certain celebrities. That's something that, masquerades itself. Being LGBT phobia, but masquerades itself as something else. I feel like the connections between LGBT phobia, misogyny, racism, and other minority experiences are incredibly linked. And we're starting to see those linkages now, and intolerance towards minority experiences being more grouped together now than they ever were. Now, the experiences of LGBT people in the 90s and 2000s were incredibly separated from those struggles experienced by women, and those struggles again experiences by people of color or Black people in the United Kingdom and in Ireland. But now we're seeing a more understanding of intersectionality within our own communities, and each community throwing their strength behind the others in order to platform those voices and to make those voices stronger and amplify them. And I think the response to that from the wider part of society has been to attack the group rather than attack the individual identities, which has been picked up and has become socially unacceptable. But when we're formed into this homogenous group, as we have done in the past 10 years, it becomes more acceptable. I think we're slowly seeing this unraveling of a phobia of difference, or something that goes against what is traditionally the norm. We're slowly seeing that unravel, and definitely in the past 30 years that's been happening. But yeah, it's happened very, very slowly, and the challenges that we experience today are still just as intense as those were experienced in about 20 years ago.
I was wondering, in speaking to other interviewees, we've asked them about the terms queer and gay and trans and so on, what it means to them, and also the first time that they heard those words and what kind of connotations that they would have had whenever they'd first come across the concept of being queer or gay. We were talking to an older interviewee yesterday who would have been your age in his 20s in the 1970s, and he had said that whenever he was growing up, the words queer and gay, he didn't know what they meant. It was either poof or pansy, and he felt that the way he felt about his identity was very much effeminized. It was defined in effeminacy. So I was wondering what you feel those terms mean, and also when you first heard them, what they meant to wider society and how that has changed? Because it's a very difficult question, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is a bit of a difficult question. Would you mind if I reverse the order, what I thought they meant and now what I know them to mean?
No problem, yes.
Definitely, yeah. So when I was younger, these words gay and queer were used in combination with words like pervert and paedophile and psycho and those kinds of words, you know. And as a child, as a young person without access to internet, you know, you don't really see a difference in the definition between these terms. So my background is a Catholic Nationalist Republican in Belfast. So just for context, but at that point, being a child, I didn't know what the difference would be between being gay and being a paedophile, you know, and that was my experience, without the ability to gather information about it. As I got older, these weapons that were used against me as a person started to lose their effect, and they started to have less of an emotional weight behind them. They just became what people would use to try and hurt your feelings, and you sort of toughen up in the worst possible way, where these very negative descriptors of your identity are being used, and you just lose that connection to them. And then as a teenager, discovering that they are used in a not a positive way, but definitely positive in comparison to the highly negative way in which they're used at that time. Fast forward a little bit to now, to gay and queer and those kinds of words, you know, they mean different. They mean difference. And, you know, trying to separate or divorce them out from their actual definitions, which are around being gay, different or odd or weird. Yeah, I mean, that's not the purpose of reclaiming a word like that. It's to take an empowering, positive energy from those definitions and reframing our understanding of that word. You know, queer definitely wasn't used in the past 5 years, but in the past 2 or 3, it has, you know, definitely started to become more and more used, especially by younger people. And the young people that I would work with a lot, you mean, they are gravitating a whole lot less towards individual identities and the LGBTQ plus community, and more so towards that umbrella term of queer as an explanation of their lived experience and their lives up until that point. So I think I think Jeannie is a little bit out of the bottle here in terms of how queer is going to be used. I think it's going to take on a very living definition of itself, and whatever way it had been used towards ourselves as young LGBTQ plus people or young queer people, that definition has changed for the incoming generation, and it is going to change further with how they live their lives, how they experience the positivity of that word, and how that is inherited by the generation after them. And that's just going to continue in that same fashion.
Now, the next question, I'm not going to ask you about the personal details of coming out, but in talking to different people, some of our older interviewees, one in particular, said that he felt that many people in the community in the 70s and 80s led a double life where they had to keep up a certain pretense with family and friends, and then in social spaces with other people from the community, this was the only place where they could be themselves. But one person that we interviewed, who is actually in her mid-20s, had said that she felt coming out was an ever-going experience, and that she found it exhausting that you constantly have to come out to new friends, new work colleagues, and so on. How damaging do you think is this for the community, and how exhausting, I think exhausting is a good word for this, is it for the community to constantly have to explain themselves to the public?
Yeah, I think in the 1990s, we got a very sanitized version of what being gay or queer is. And that was you come out once, usually in secondary school or going off to college. And this is all Americanized, by the way. And then that's it. You are a caricature for your entire life. Now, that's not exactly reality. That's just what was portrayed to the general public who maybe didn't know a gay person in their lives. It's a little bit of a phenomenon because that definition of coming out is when someone's disclosing their self-identified sexual orientation or gender identity, often by their own choice and their own decision, but not always. And I think the key thing there is self-identified. People see coming out as the end of a process when, in fact, often it's like a journey. Coming out can be your very first real way of recognizing that you are LGBTQ plus. It's something that we have inbuilt in our own understanding in my job. Coming out is not the one-off thing that people that I would wish that it was in a certain way. I think apologies, I'm just trying to clear my thoughts here.
No problem at all, no problem.
Not to worry. So the one-off event experience, that is something that is so unrealistic that it just never happens. Even in the day of social media, it never happens. I think that is a misconception that has been given to the public of what it means to be LGBTQ plus. The coming out is this one experience that Kurt Hummel had in that episode of Glee, but it's really not. I think the way to see coming out really is a traumatic experience. And I say that because the first time we have a traumatic experience, it is always the most memorable. And every time we revisit that trauma, and as we continue to revisit that trauma, it becomes less and less important. And it becomes less noteworthy in our lives. And the first time we come out, we can actually look at that as quite a traumatic experience. There's a reason why in the most accepting families, in the most accepting society, that we have ever been in, which we can definitely consider in the last 3 years, it's been a very positive society, to come out in. There's a reason why those kids are still anxious and they're still afraid. Now, the LGBTQ plus community is what we could call a sparse community. So that is very similar to the disabled or differently abled communities. Often there is no genetic basis for members of that community. They happen at every single level of society and they gather together to form a community. So in that understanding, intergenerational trauma and transgenerational trauma continues to happen in those sparse communities. But with social media, unlike in the more localized version in Northern Ireland, where local communities are inheriting trauma from their parents and their aunts and uncles from the Troubles, we're inheriting the coming out trauma of people a world away. And kids are looking at these negative experiences of people, maybe a world away in America or in Spain. And those are having an effect on their perceptions of themselves and their own disclosure of identity. And sometimes, in those moments between realization and the first time they disclose their gender identity or sexual orientation, those are perhaps the most damaging moments because the average age of realization in Northern Ireland is 12, and the average age of coming out is 14. Now, the average age of coming out is dropping, but the average age of realization of your sexual orientation is remaining the same. What is happening within those years? What fears and anxieties are young people experiencing that they feel unable to come forward about for 2 years at the age of adolescence? internal and external perceptions of sexual orientation and gender identity, if they're coming from more negative mindsets and more negative backgrounds, that's going to have an effect on their own self-esteem, their own self-worth. And yeah, I think the thing to think about it, just to return to the core of the point there, is that this is a journey. Coming out is a journey. Ideally, we want to get to a point where coming out is not necessary, because the assumption, the pressure to not be or to be LGBTQ plus is not there. And then the trauma of it stops. But the fact that there is an expectation that they're not reaching, that is so deeply and intrinsically linked to perceptions of perversity or acting outside of a societal norm, that is having, I think, a very negative effect on younger generations and generations before us.
You talk about the younger generation and youth, and I know that's something that you're very passionate about, working with young people in the community. One of the things that shocked us in researching a bit of the history of the LGBT community was Section 28, the piece of legislation introduced by Thatcher's government, which banned the promotion and even discussion of homosexuality in schools. I was wondering, from your own experience and from your knowledge of the topic, how do you think attitudes towards the LGBT community have changed in terms of education and schools and so on?
So Section 28 didn't have an effect
didn't,
in Northern
it didn't
Ireland.
Have an effect in Northern Ireland, but as you say, but suppose there was campaigns like Save Ulster from Sodomy, and there was a lot
Completely. Yeah. So the effect of Section 28 on the populations that are affected in England and Wales are, I mean, quite legendary, in that it created this cloak of shame and culture of shame in talking about identity and sort of thinking about it in a sexual sense. Sexual orientation and gender identity are not inherently sexual things. They have linkages to a community and a linkage to a culture and so on and so forth. In Northern Ireland, I think the big thing for us has been the religious perceptions of sexual orientation and gender identity. As you were just rightly saying, you know, the Save Ulster from Sodomy and the campaigning against sexual orientation and sexual orientation rights, they have their hooks into education even now. You know, we still do training in post-primary colleges, and we do training in the training organizations that are doing that, the colleges and universities. So Strathmillus University College, I think we've done St. Mary's, you know, we've been all over the place. And religion still plays a very, very big part in the education of teachers. And I suppose you could link that with the secularism that we split our schools into. But it still plays a massive part. When we did a little bit of research in 2017, we found that 84% of young people received no information or support relating to their identity while at school. And when we look at the Education and Training Inspectorate, whenever they look at relationships and sexuality education, and you know, the quality of that, teachers are reporting that they don't feel supported by either their institutions or by society at large to discuss these issues with young people the same way that they are being discussed in the United Kingdom, or the wider United Kingdom, or in the Republic of Ireland, where, you know, the discussions of sexual orientation and gender identity are not even happening to the same extent as the United Kingdom. So yeah, I think the barriers that are retained there do come from religion, but they come from more of a structural bias, in that a lot of religious figures are so deeply linked now to political figures and political parties that continue to draw from a religious base and use religious power in that same form.
And it's very interesting, as you say. Do you think that sort of fundamentalism in terms of Christianity is more damaging on the community here in Northern Ireland than sectarianism in terms of the troubles and the effects of that?
I think fundamentalism of any sort is incredibly damaging to the fabric of society. Fundamentalism is without negotiation, it's without adaption, and it's without change. I wouldn't necessarily pick out, now if we're looking at fundamentalism as a concept, you know, you could link that to so many different things, and every single thing resists change. And when we're talking about the structural issues affecting young people in this way, we need change and we need structural change. What has worked before is not going to work anymore. You know, we need to be more open and look at those different ways of challenging those oppressive structures. We need to recognize that those oppressive structures do exist and they're not the good old days. And we need to really have a discussion that isn't filled with insults. I find, you know, when Cara Friend, my organization, goes in to have a conversation about these topics, the expectation is that we're going to go in and shout at people. But that's not it. That's not any organization's aim or goal or action, but it is the perception of them.
I was wondering, Lee, when you were growing up, what were the key role models in terms of the media and music and prose and literature and so on that would have fostered your queer identity and encouraged it?
My queer identity? More... I think for me, it has been looking at people that are breaking those barriers, who are breaking those boundaries, you know, anywhere from in the 90s, Spice Girls, great, you know, breaking boundaries with acceptable misogyny, you know, Lady Gaga and transphobia and being accused of being a trans woman, like it's an accusation. Which I find insane, but I suppose the allure there is a person who is more than willing to and has broken gender roles and roles that society place on them. I think that's something that a lot of queer people can reflect on and see as a positive impact in their childhood and their growing up, is when you see someone breaking the rules that are making your life hell, you sort of look up to that, you know?
Exactly. You mentioned working with Cara Friend there, and I was wondering, in your work with Cara Friend, how do you think attitudes towards the community change as you move from urban centres in Northern Ireland, like Belfast and Lake Derry, and you move to urbans or to rural settings in the countryside?
Okay, so... First of all, this is a challenge that I put to every single person looking at rurality in Northern Ireland, is our statutory understanding of what rurality is, what urbanism is, that's wrong. That does not fit Northern Ireland in any way, shape or form. I would say that perhaps the only urban centre in Northern Ireland is Belfast. Every other town and what we define as a city, like Lisburn and Derry, Londonderry, you know, they are rural. You know, consider the population in those towns that are coming in and coming out of rural areas. And then consider the people that live in a place that have no neighbours for 3 miles. They're remote. They're the remotest of the remote. And we should be instituting an understanding of rurality that is the same as Australia, because we don't have the transport links to facilitate the kind of sparsity of population in Northern Ireland. They have, you know, they in Australia they do, but just with the way our transport links are, how the population is centered, and also the actual foundations of the towns and cities, as well as the disconnectedness of some members of the community in Northern Ireland, we would have to look at that third category there, for those people that are most disconnected. But you were saying there about the difference in what between rurality, what were you saying?
Differences in attitudes towards the community as you move from urban
Yeah,
settings to rural settings.
sorry about that. I'm just pouncing on something when I see it.
No problem.
it's a youth worker in me. So in urban backgrounds, I think historically we would have been at a situation where we would see more acceptability to different, I'm going to say lifestyles, but I don't mean that in reference to sexual orientation and gender identity. There is a general more acceptability towards people who have different cultural backgrounds, different community backgrounds, and behave with customs that are different to those traditionally held. And so sexual orientation and gender identity is naturally more accepted, because people are more used to difference in those places. Now, rural areas, it begins to lessen, and then remote is where there's nothing. You know, there's nothing but an echo chamber. And that echo chamber, it's sort of like a scale of openness on one end. The more urban you go, and the more echo chambery you are when you go down. So rural areas in the middle have a little bit of that echo chamber, but they have the ability to be open because of transport links, and also because if they are a well-developed area, then they can have a free exchange of people of different communities and backgrounds. Just in a place like Derry, for example, you know, there's free flow of people coming in from Donegal, and then there's also a free flow of people coming from Strabane and Belfast from yes, later on in the development of Derry, but yes, there's free flow in those three ways. So that's why it's almost like the exception in the West for being a rural, almost urban as a source of identity, or a source of multiculturalism in that form. But we can't get out of the fact that people who are living in Derry are exposed to more vulnerabilities that are similar to rural individuals than to urban individuals, and especially the lack of infrastructural funding and a lack of support of the city itself. I think that's where I'm coming from there. It is a city, definitely, but it has that rural connection there because of almost like a bias from east to west, if you know what I mean.
Definitely.
Yeah, and then that echo chamber, yeah. But with the advent of social media, the advent of social media means that information is more freely accessed everywhere at the same time. We would see young people in urban backgrounds less likely to seek out information on their own than from rural and remote backgrounds. So that is really, really positive in a certain sense, because young people from rural backgrounds, anywhere from Lisburn to Derry, are really getting information the same way that a young person would get information from Belfast. The only difference is that, you know, they don't have to suffer through a 30-minute conversation to get that information, and they get it in 5 minutes. And so there's the positive there, but then you've got the remote young people that in a really strange way almost transplant another country's understanding of LGBT identity. So there's some young people that we have worked with in the past that have completely adopted the Americanized understanding of LGBTQ plus and queer identity. And it's a little bit of a culture shock whenever they come into somewhere like Belfast or Omagh or Derry, where there is an understanding of queer identity. So that is something that is something to note in that kind of conversation there, yeah.